Thanks for listening to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. I want to give a shout out to Racetech, racetech.com. Tell them you listen to Pulp. You'll save money. Pulp24, code to save, racetech.com. Thank you to those guys. Suspension done right. Motors, too. Racetech.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Say that dedication to your frustration.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Thanks for listening, man. Appreciate it. Don't forget to check out those archives. Lots of great stuff in there with lots of riders and lots of people over the years. So if you haven't ever heard your story from your favorite rider or your industry person, go through the archives. Lots there. Like I said, go to pulpmex.com, go through the podcast tab, and just scroll away, man. You'll have a lot of fun. So thank you to the folks listening. Thank you to Fly Racing, 25 years of Fly. Formula helmet, the Formula S helmet could save your life. It's a helmet with a brain. The regular Formula helmet, I mean, it's got a super safe lining. It's got the Rion technology in it. It's quiet. It's lightweight. Really great helmet from the folks at Fly Racing. Evo gear, top of the line Evo gear. It's got the BOA closure system on it. Fits well, stretches in all the right places. Lots of colors to choose from and lots of sizes as well. So thanks to the folks at Fly Racing, flyracing.com. For all that they do, you look at Dean Wilson, Max Anstey, RJ Hampshire, so many riders wearing Fly Racing out there week to week in Supercross and Motocross. They support the Supercross series as well. So thank you to the folks at Fly. If you haven't checked them out for a while, lean into it, man. Appreciate it. Maxxis Tires as well. Talking about not checking out in a while. Maxxis has got some new release tires. I just did a podcast with Mitchell Harrison. Talked about how much he was surprised at the new Maxxis tires. So if you haven't thought about Maxxis for a while, well, look at their soft intermediate to hard terrain tires. Maxxis.com for more information. Developed by some guy named Jeremy McGrath. I think he's pretty good and kind of knows what he's doing. So thank you to the folks at Maxxis Tires. Great mountain bike tires as well. Renthal. Renthal.com. Made over there in the UK. Factory Honda, Kawasaki, KTM, using Renthal, and whether it's chains, bars, sprockets, they've got you covered. They got a really cool bar fit, works fit tool on their website. They have a dealer inventory locator as well for the USA, so you can see what your local dealer has in stock. Renthal.com, new and exciting things coming from those guys down the line too, like I think maybe another month or so. Renthal.com, you know the name, you know the products they make. So thank you to those guys. We'll tell you more about motorsport.com later, but it's the number one online retailer to get your OEM parts or aftermarket parts. So thank you to those guys for making this podcast happen. Thank you people for listening. Check out the archives. Check out the LVK podcast. Check out the Re-Raceables. Lots of things going on. PulpMX.com to read some cool stories from Kiefer and Tony Blazer and more. So yeah, just promoting some of my crap. All right. Thanks for listening. All right. On to the show. All right, everybody. As promised on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast, a good friend of mine from over the years, certainly a man who has accomplished a ton in the industry, and it's kind of relevant right now, from Monster Energy Kawasaki, the crew chief for Adam Scene Cirillo, Oscar Werdemann. What's up, Oscar? How are you, man?
I'm good, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for doing this. Appreciate it. Yeah, lots to talk to you about because you have done, man, you've done a lot in this industry, and I know I've done one of these podcasts with you before. People can go back and search it in the archives, and we kind of talk about your path from Sweden to De Groot to America and all of that. But today's going to be a little bit more of an overview of all of that. First of all, though, Adam Scene Cirillo, the news is out. We all kind of knew it was coming. It's unfortunate. He had a great career, but Adam Scene Cirillo hanging it up after Salt Lake City. You're his crew chief. You worked for him for a number of years. Not surprising, but surprising. Oscar?
Yeah, pretty much. I think you summed it up like that. You know, it's It's a bummer, yeah, because we're going on the this will be season 5, you know, with Adam. I can totally see why he's doing it. You know, it'd been a big struggle, you know, with his physical health, right? Mm-hmm. But this is not what I thought would happen when we started to work together in 2019.
Yeah.
You know, that's for sure. But like looking back now, you know, we saw the signs. Like now we can see the signs from this hand issue like early.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. So it's I guess it's kind of remarkable that he could even get the results what he did.
Yeah, it really is. And you look at like when he first started on 450s, he won the Monster Cup, right? And then the next year, he was the fastest guy in like 6 straight Supercrosses and like 7 straight sessions on the track, you know?
Yeah, and I think A1, he could almost have won when he got together with Barsha.
Yeah.
I think it was A1. It was one of the Anaheims.
Yep. Yeah, no, for
sure. Yeah, no, it, like looking back now, like if somebody told me that he would never win one Supercross, you'd be like, no, no way.
I know, totally, right? It's unbelievable.
He has so much speed and talent. But hey, that's racing, right? It's it's tough. He's still, you know, he's still done a lot. He's done way more than most.
Yeah, and if you told me Robbie Renard and Travis Pastrana never won a... I mean, Renard never even won a 125 Supercross. That's fucking amazing. Pastrana never won a 250s, 450s, just like Adam. I would have... Yeah, you would have bet all the money you had in the world that these dudes would get at least a win, you know?
Yes. Yeah, but it's tough. It's tough. Like, you know, during the Ricky era, right? How many guys did a win?
Yeah, no, for sure, right? So what's he been like to work with all these years, and also, like, I'm sure many people know, like, he's done stem cell stuff, he's done surgeries, he's done everything he possibly can to try to fix this issue. It doesn't seem like it's gonna fix it. So what's it been like for you as a crew chief to, you know, be in, be out, have a guy who's frustrated, all of that? Like, how's it been for you?
Well, it definitely been, you know, frustrated for all of us, right? At least the last couple of years, mm-hmm. you know, he have tried, you know, anything he could think about and anything that somebody else would suggest to him, you know what I mean? So that was good. Like, it was not from lack of trying from him, you know, and it's the same with the bike, you know, we moved foot pegs and handlebars and clamps and seat and suspension and, you know, everything to try to get a little bit more out of him, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the same, obviously, it been tough because, you know, we had the same goals as Adam, you know. Obviously, it's more frustrating for him to walk away without achieving them, you know, because we're still here, right? But it been tough. You know, you want to, you know, you always want to be able to tell him something, you know what I mean, after a bad day, so to speak. But like, eventually, it's like, you know what he don't want to talk about it, and I'm like, what do you say, right? Yeah. Because we know it's not going to be good, so you can't tell it before it goes to a race. You know, all right, you got to crush it. Arm's going to be fine.
Yeah, the last few races, I didn't even talk to him about his race, really. You know, like, yeah, what do you say? What do you?
Yeah, now it's just enjoy it, like have fun, you know, and try to enjoy it, which is, you know, easier said than done for sure.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, just enjoying everything else. But yeah, no, it's been tough.
Mm-hmm. Did anything help with the bar bend and bars and grips and foot pegs and seats? Did anything help him? Like anything? Did you find anything that worked?
Yeah, I think the more we could use, the more he was able to use his legs.
Yeah.
Right. To hold on. And obviously, you want to have the bike as good as possible, because if you know your arm going to get weak, if you don't like your bike, when it hits, it's going to hit harder, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's why it was much tougher on a 450. You know, I think this was might have been there before.
Yeah.
You know, but then you go to a race session settings, right? It's tougher. And I think the new modern tracks, which has tons of ruts and grip, is even harder on the body for him, right? Because he lacks strength. And if you have traction, the bike's going to want to go where you point the tire, right? Like, so I think you have to be stronger on the tracks now, right? And you know, his arm hand goes, you know, numb on him, you know, it's tough. So yeah, we didn't find a magic fix.
No,
that's for sure.
No.
But it was not from lack of trying.
No, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure everybody was trying to do everything they could. And like I said, off the track, he was doing everything, man. Like, it seemed like anyways, you know, trying to get this, trying to get this fixed. It is talking about Supercross 24. You know, put aside the frustrations with Adam and his injury. It has been a slog for you guys, man. I'm talking to, you know, people like yourself and mechanics and riders every week, and the weather is nothing that Feld guys can control, and it's been hitting the series. It's been, you know, washing and prepping and just it has been a slog, hasn't it? It hasn't been a lot of fun for many people.
No, I'm really glad I'm not a mechanic anymore. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Yeah. Because, most, you know, a lot of races, most of our guys, they spend the time in the wash area.
Yeah.
You know, we actually brought Kurt Rudd to a couple of races, and I don't think he saw any bikes on track until the main event because he was just helping
just doing things,
our guys and the PC guys in the wash area.
Yeah.
So it's obviously it's unfortunate. I still think by the time we have raced, most of them, obviously not San Francisco, they still have done a tremendous work with the track. You know, it's still, they've still been raceable, you know, obviously the conditions haven't been ideal, but it's still been decent, actually good racing, right?
Yeah.
but a lot of work for the crews.
Oh,
a lot
absolutely. Of work. You're also, you're losing a rider at the end of Salt Lake and you're losing a mechanic, after St. Louis, or you lost a mechanic after St. Louis. Shanty, going to go work in NASCAR. Brian Kranz, Tomac's old guy. He's been through some health issues, but he's on the other side now, it sounds like. Kranz is going to step in and work for AC for the last little bit. How'd you get along with Shanty, and are you looking forward to working with Brian?
Yeah, maybe what you mentioned before, you know, maybe all the washing made Shanty walk away.
Yeah, exactly, right? He's just like, screw this.
Yeah. No, Shanty is awesome. You know, everybody knows him and hears him. You know, he's good. Kranz is obviously opposite. He's the quiet one and the other one is not. No, they're both awesome. You know, it's a bummer that he leaves right now. Like, of course, but, you know, he's on to new adventures and I'm stoked for him. Mm-hmm. I wish him all the best. We're very fortunate that we can just have another mechanic, you know, that been around probably as long as me, I would say.
Yeah.
Close to it. So, Kranz is our test guy. He's out with Brock, so it's very easy to fulfill the spot. Like, obviously the test side, you know, would lose some time, right, when Kranz is moving over. But we're still very fortunate to have like a race ready mechanic in our shop that's ready to go.
Yeah. Do you see yourself as a fill in guy in the horizon somewhere for outdoors?
I think we all would like some, but it's tough, right? You know, because it's obviously, it has to make sense, right? You want somebody that can achieve good results. And then I think it's also depending on who you ask, you know, what is a good result, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if the sponsors if they want a top five guy, well, you're going to have a tough time finding that.
Yep.
So, you know, it's been a lot of talks backwards and forwards. I don't think it's probably not done yet, but as of right now, we just have Jason for the summer.
Right. Hey, I think Cowie, you talked about your role as a mechanic and I talked off the top about all the things you've done in the industry. And, I think Cowie was the first one to have crew chiefs for riders. Honda does now too. And I think Yamaha does. I think the Star guys do too. But, really, I think Kawasaki started this sort of model of NASCAR car racing, and I think it's a good one. It's certainly different. I'm interested in your role as crew chief. Like, so, you know, you're the one dealing with the rider, but there's also you know, suspension people and motor people. Does everything funnel through you, and you try to make the decisions, the best decisions, you know, in consultation with Adam? Or how does that work? How does the flow of what you're going to do between sessions go?
Yeah, that's basically like a structure, right? Like it's more like a MotoGP style, like a road race style, right? You know, obviously they have more mechanics under them there, but that's essentially it, right? So I talk to our Kaipo, our suspension guy, and Brami, our Showa technician, you know, and then Shanty, the mechanic, the rider, you know, and if you have some tires for Dunlop or the engine department or the trainer. So basically, you know, every team is... You know, you have a lot of great people and they all want to help. And I think it's tough for riders many times to have, you know, input from six different people. So they basically all go through me, and then, you know, I have the finals. Not that I have all the ideas, but I do the final decision.
Yeah.
You know? So basically, then it's also easier for the rider, right? Because if he's unhappy with the bike, well, he just has to go to me. You know, if it's suspension or engine or training or testing schedule or whatever, right? It's easier. Just he has one man, and also, basically as a mechanic, that's kind of, you know, what you do, but you run out of time. You know, I remember my last few years with Kenny, like, because you want to discuss and you want to get the bike better and you want to, like, you know, learn new things, but then you're going to build a bike at the same time and you're running out of daylight.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really, really good way how we're doing it here. Mm-hmm. And you know.
Yeah, I like it. I can remember so many times when I was a privateer mechanic and doing everything and making the adjustments and talking to the rider. And then I moved to Factory Yamaha, and I was at KTM, but that wasn't a really true factory in a way. I go to Yamaha with Red Dog, and I've said this many times on my shows, like, it went from me saying, hey man, the bike sounds lean, or hey, let's do this, or let's groove a tire, or let's, you know, go in on the rebound or whatever. It went from that into, like, sometimes you got Doug Shapinski at Bridgestone. You got our suspension guy. You got our motor guy, Bob Oliver. You got Corey Hutter. You got Jimmy Perry, the manager, weighing in. Sometimes wife wants to say something. Ronnie Tischner was working with him as a coach. I would hear Tischner talk about the bike with him. And I was like, holy shit. Like sometimes if a practice session doesn't go that well, let's leave.
Which happens.
Let's leave it, because we like this setting at this track. Well, you know, everybody's just trying to help, like you said. Everybody wants the best for the rider, but you're overwhelming them with information. So I really like the program that you just talked about, where let's try to flow through one guy, you know?
No, it's way better. And then also, you know, because we also rely on data, which takes a lot of my time.
Mm-hmm.
But even you can plan out, you know, what you have more time, so you can plan out what you're going to do. You know, like, maybe the rider gets mad that they can't test straight away, you know, but maybe there's a plan that, okay, you need to ride more first, you need to get your fitness up or whatnot, right? It's easier for me to be in the crew chief position to do those decisions, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than the mechanic. And then I think we can get the most out of everybody too, you know, because the mechanic can work on the bike, and then when he goes home at night, if he wants to, he can, you know, turn it off and not stay up all night and dwell over a good or a bad race, you know.
Leave that
to me.
and I think sometimes just like the rider gets flooded with information from people trying to help, and it's not a good thing, you know.
Yes, and it's always right, and like you said, they all want to help, and it takes a really strong rider or individual to decipher that, right? Like, what's good and what's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously all the people that talk to him, he trusts them in certain areas, right? I really like how we're doing it, you know what I mean? And it's I think it's very beneficial for everybody involved in the team, and especially for the rider, right? Because it makes it more streamlined and easy for them.
Here's the thing, though, to me, is you've been a suspension guy, you've been a mechanic, you've won championships, you've worked with the best of the best. You're perfect for a crew chief because you understand all aspects of the bike. And even me, like, I never revalve suspension. I change suspension oil. That's all I know. So I think it's a great plan. It's a great idea, Oscar, but you gotta have someone like yourself, which is kind of rare, I think, to do the job, or at least have somebody that can fundamentally grasp all aspects of the motorcycle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, you need to know a little bit about everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you don't have to know it all, because that's why we have the engine specialist, you know, and the suspension specialist. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest thing is you have to be willing to make a decision, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And then, because sometimes, you know, I might have the worst idea, but the suspension guy has the best idea. But then you have to, like, when it comes down to it, you have to make a decision. And if it doesn't work, it's on you. And if you know what I mean? Like. But doing with my background, for sure, you know, it helps, because like when with Chad or James or Kenny, you know, it was basically very similar to what I'm doing, I would say, you know, not on the same level, but you still did a lot of decisions and were heavily involved with everything.
So, yeah, here's a tricky question for you to answer, though. With, you know, every suspension guy's got a theory and an idea of what works, and a lot of suspension guys are like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I know how to do suspension and blah, blah, blah. Do you find yourself sometimes like, you know, there's a chain of command, there's an order of things that the KYB people want to do, and Kaipo, the in-house suspension guy wants to do.
Yep.
Do you find yourself sometimes going, I don't know if that's the way to go, but I'm going to let them have some rope here?
No, absolutely. But the good thing, though, I think for suspension guys, if you ask a rider, mm-hmm. there is no decent suspension guys. They are great or terrible.
Or terrible, sure.
There's nothing in the middle. Like, it's a hard job.
Yeah.
And even I think us having a crew chief actually helps the suspension guys, because they are not on the chopping block.
They're insulated a little bit, right, yeah.
No, but how we try to do it is, you know, between Kaipo and Brami and myself, you know, obviously we will probably have three different ideas.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, I try to convince them why I think mine, and mm-hmm. they try to convince them why their idea is better. And okay. then normally we come to a conclusion like, okay, well, that one makes most sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how we do it. And that's a good thing. You don't have to do that in front of the rider.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know? Yeah, right. is that BFRC shock? Is that ever – I mean, some guys love it. Some guys don't like it. Is that thing going to ever stick over here?
Who knows?
Yeah.
They probably said the same about air forks in the 70s, right? And then it showed up with a vengeance.
Yeah.
25 years later.
I feel like air forks are like what you said, a suspension guys. Guys either love them or hate them. You know, they're still out there. There's some people still running them.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah, no, WP have some good ones, and KYB. Right.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't think on the – well, they still use them in Europe, the BFRC.
Yeah, Geiser's using them.
I think for Supercross, the traditional shock, at least for us, it's more all around. You know, it's I think sometimes the BFRC like almost works too well in a sense, right? Because it can pick up damping quicker, which is, you know, the purpose of a suspension.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes, like, you know, if you hit some bumps before entering a whoops, like the suspension is already working, right? So the riders are not really used to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like in, you know, all in MotoGP, you know, that's kind of the concept they're using.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, they have all the money in the world, and that's what they choose, right?
Yeah.
So I think if they had the, you know, depending on where they wanted the development to go.
Uh-huh.
But most our guys, you know, they raced a traditional shock their whole life, and you come here and there's not really enough time to test ever, right? Because you're going to, you know, you work on your fitness, you're moving teams. Then I would say that, you know, the traditional one is the safer bet.
Is it a little bit like putting on a moose the first time? You know, these guys, it's dead feeling. You know, everyone kind of freaks out a little bit when they first start riding with mooses.
Well, I think the problem was he had a really bad rep, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was funny, like, obviously I never ridden in one fast. I wouldn't know how it feels. But, like, when Adam, perfect example. So he started in, you know, end of 19. That's all we used, mm-hmm. you know, the BFRC. And he was fastest and everything. And then even before he got hurt in when he went over the bars, he was begging to try a normal shock.
Yep.
Right? Because he looks over on the starting line, and he's the only one.
Yeah.
He's different than the rest.
And I think he said it faded, too. He said it was fading.
Yeah, but we have no data to support that, to be honest.
Okay.
I don't think he did. But it could have been. Yeah, like, yeah. It could have been something we couldn't measure.
Yep.
But then we went back to our normal one, and he had worse result. And then every year since, he'd been asking to try the BFRC again. You know?
Funny how that works, right?
And even like to this year, I was like, well, there is no chance you're getting it on. Like, I'm not going to go through it, because if you're going to take it off and have the same results, like it doesn't help anyone. So it's definitely something there, but it's different.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, Chase made it work last summer, right?
He did pretty good.
Yeah.
He did pretty good.
Okay. So two questions for you here. And there might be different answers. First of all, suspension guy, mechanic, crew chief. what role have you enjoyed the most in the time in your sport? Which role do you like the best?
It's different. It's funny because I actually spoke to Dan, I think, one time about this, because obviously me and Chad, when I was his mechanic, mm-hmm. We were super tight. I was actually support. My title was actually crew chief, but then, Paul DeLaurier mm-hmm. had the family issues. So I became his mechanic. We were, he's one of my best friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was awesome. At least now looking back. But then now you work with riders, it's hard to get the same connection, right? But then also I'm 20 years older.
yeah, true.
You know, so now it's different. I really enjoyed it when I was mechanic, and at least until the end. Yeah. The end wasn't so much fun. But I really enjoy my job now because obviously I'm older, so you don't want to just grind as a mechanic. And it'll give you the chance of we have a suspension dyno, mm-hmm. I can run that as much as I want, or I can be with the engine guys. You can learn and you can get new skills. We spend a lot of time with data. So it's way more interesting in a way.
Yeah.
So you fulfill the excitement in a more technical way,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it's tough to say. I would just say now is probably the best because I can see myself doing this job for a really, really long time.
That was one of my questions I was going to ask you. Okay, so the second part of that, you like being the crew chief the best, but what did you have the most fun doing? Mechanicking for riders?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when at least looking back, that was a lot more fun. Right.
Yeah.
But also, you're also younger. You're in a different time.
Yeah,
it was fun to be on the road 5 days out of a week. Mm-hmm. That's not fun anymore.
No, my
highlight. Even when I was suspension guy at 2-2, we had a blast, too, because we had a great crew. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. I think all three of those jobs were super, really fun, because even when I did suspension in MotoGP, that was awesome too, because you travel the world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
I guess dirt bikes are fun. That's what it comes down to.
Were there times when you were out late at night with your rider, the guy from Australia, the number 22, where you were maybe we should go to bed?
They might have happened. You know what's funny? It's not funny. I don't know where we were. The worst one was in a Bercy, I think, because I think he was knocking on my door. He and Langston tried to wake us up, and it was early. But I didn't go out with him, but I heard him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we might have been somewhere. It's probably 08. And he's like, "Hey, let's go out." I'm like, "No, I can't go out. I'm working tomorrow."
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He just looked at me. He's like, "Yeah, I know you are, but I'm riding. Let's go."
That's what I mean. You're supposed to be the responsible one. And there were probably times where you were like, "Hey, man, we got a race tomorrow."
Yeah. He always made it.
He did.
He always made it.
When Stu went out in 08 and he kind of knew that Chad knew that this was his,
Yeah,
that was quite a season. So
that was quite a season. But too, even with Chad, when he's out too, he's pretty smart. So if there was other riders around, he'd be drinking water, but they'd be thinking he'd be drinking vodka, right?
He
definitely went to bed late, but he's pretty smart with everything he does.
There were times where I'm on the outside looking in, and I'm talking to different people, and I'm watching things, and I'm just like, Chad is absolutely out of his mind with these bike settings and the changes and all of this stuff. I mean, Chad told me one time that you can't change your suspension with clickers. You just can't. Clickers won't do anything. You got to change the settings. And I'm like, huh, okay. He was, adamant on building a MotoGP type of team and mm-hmm. testing like those guys and everything else. There had to have been times, Oscar, where you were just like, "Oh no, I got to take the front end off again in between sessions." Was he completely lost at times, or did everything sort of make sense?
I think now, looking at it, it all makes sense.
Okay.
Not all, like majority. Let's say majority.
Majority, okay.
Well, at the time, I thought he was losing his mind many times.
Okay.
Right. You know, yeah, but like in 07, I think he was. Mm-hmm. I think he gave up on the suspension, or the suspension was good enough. So then from there on, we just did, you know, races and clamps.
Yep.
You know, basically, we'd be like, I'd be looking at my watch, and I was like, okay, the main is in 15 minutes or 20. You know, so yeah, I'd go over to chat. I'm like, hey, this is your last chance. If we're going to change clamps, we're doing it now. It's like, all right, let's do it. No, it was a lot. And then, the whole time I was with him. But I also, you know, I also thank him because I also learned a lot.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and we learned a lot. But the hard part, I think, you know, many times though, like you think like this guy's crazy. It's not going to change anything. You know, like you're going to, like, oh, wait, you're going to win, or, you know, we're riding motocross, like Ricky's going to win. It doesn't matter the outcome much, but you're like, why are we doing this? But I think too, like as a rider, cause you know how gnarly Chad was, like he would get beat on a Saturday. Right. And then the following Monday, in his mind, he's going to win.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
But I think to do that, you also have to blame something else than yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it sucks for me in my position, but I think sometimes the rider has to blame the equipment, even if it's not just for them, you know, to keep their confidence. Right.
Yeah. Sometimes it takes a strong rider to be like, I got to step up. I got to dig deep here. It takes a strong rider. Yeah.
Yes.
Now would Chad, would he leave, would he change races or offset from a heat to a main?
Oh yeah, every week,
dude. So he would even go into a night show with a setting that he liked, like
no,
holy,
no. We done.
I get links. Qualifying and all that.
No. We done links and clamps and races and straight into the main. I feel it out on the parade lap, and he goes fast with it.
That's nuts to me. Like as a mechanic.
It's wild.
It's wild, right? Yeah. Yeah.
It's
like,
wild.
I mean, you're like, dude, like I get the qualifying setups and practices and nailing the bike for the night show. I get all that. But once you get a setting, like, here's what I like, you know, but I guess not.
Yeah. But I think too, though, that's where he's smart. Like his memory is so good. Mm-hmm. Right. So like most of the things we try, you're done. You know what I mean? Like coming for clamps or races, you've ridden with it before. So you kind of, you know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Right. And even like a suspension change, right? It's not like you do a complete revalving, but it's completely opposite.
Yeah.
You know, it's tweaks. So I think, you know, if you're into that kind of stuff, you kind of know what it's going to do. You expect it. But obviously, you're not always going to hit the mark, right? You know what I mean? Like there is a chance you're making it worse.
How fast could you do a shim change, like on a stack?
Well, at the time, I think I was the fastest because we had no time.
I'm sure you were, right? Like,
but that was the fun, though. Like in the end of 2-2, right? Especially like the last motocross season,
Cowie years, yeah,
the 13, 14 there, right? Like, you know, we knew like Chad wasn't, you know, he wasn't a motocross guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so between, you know, Goose and Lars, whoever else was there, like that's how we kept ourselves, you know, engaged and entertained. So like, if he was up for a change, we would do it. Like, and then we would time anything. You know, everything we did was how fast can we do it? You know,
okay. Yeah.
We did Motocross the Nations in Latvia, and we for warm up on Sunday morning, we tried a different link in the pit lane, and the Euro guys were just looking at us like, what are they doing?
Yeah, that's crazy, but. I mean, he never settled, like you said. Like there were times when I was with him at Yamaha where I was like, this guy's a dick. But like you said, he would just, you know, never settle.
We had a dinner. It must have been in the 2-2 days. Me and him were at a dinner, and I asked him, like, hey, what's the best bike you ever ridden? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you've been on so many bikes, right? Yeah. And he's like, oh, you know, the handling-wise, it will be the 2008 Yamaha. Right? Obviously, had a carburetor on it, so the Suzuki was better for carburation. And I look over and I was like, you don't think it would have been a good thing to at least tell me once that this is the best bike, like during that year?
That season, like at all? Yeah. instead of just trying to kill myself every single weekend.
Yeah.
Hey, how crazy did it get going back to the Stu days with Kranjak and Larry, and when Larry got fired or quit or whatever, and he was, and then James was getting like arrested at some point in the middle of the year. I think that was the same season. Like, you must have just been like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, that was super bummer, because that whole team, or majority of the staff on the team, you know, we almost worked together for, I think, like maybe like 8-9 years.
Was it that long, huh? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Maybe not that long. 6. Yeah. Whenever we were like, because basically nobody left the team. Right. You know, we had the same truck driver, the same mechanics, the same office assistant, you know?
Yeah.
So it was really weird, right? Because we didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. We had no clue, right? You know, so we were basically, you know, don't talk to Larry kind of thing. Right? Yeah. And then we're like, shoot, if Larry is, you know, he went on, you know, what did they say? Family.
Family time. Family time, I think.
Family time, right? Like, we were kind of like, we were almost scared for ourselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, afterwards, looking back at, I think I wish I would have. I don't know what I would have done, but like I wish I would have, you know, kept closer to Larry. I don't know, really know. I just mm-hmm. felt like it's looking back, like it was. I still don't really know the whole thing, because obviously he went to court and that stuff. But yeah. I know, you know, Larry might have done something or not, but I think he also got really mistreated.
I think Larry won money. I think he won. If I remember,
I haven't heard that. Yeah, I have no idea.
Right.
You know, but I know, even like talking to Larry and Kranjak, right? Like mm-hmm. that team was just about to be the real deal. Like when it was making money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if it didn't go south, like, well, then maybe it still would have been there today. I don't know.
Yep.
You know, but it was bad. It was bad. And then, like you said, you know, he left, and then we floated by in 11, I think, right? Like James were leading a little bit, but then basically ended up fourth in the championship, and then it all just, you know, fell apart.
Where were you when Brooks said, hey, Chad's out, I signed James?
Salt Lake City Supercross.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think. I think it was the second to last race, and he told me in the Saturday morning, mm-hmm. and he was pumped, you know. He was super pumped, like super excited. I remember that. And he looked at me and like, he could see I wasn't as excited as he was. Because obviously I'm like, we're just about to win the championship here with Chad, right?
Yeah.
Chad was always my boy. Right? So I was like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
But then, you know, I had a chance to go with Chad. I stayed with Larry because Larry's the one that got me to America, you know. Mm-hmm. He was my manager from 03 to until the end of LMM.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
so
we worked together.
So you had a chance to go to Suzuki then. You could have gone.
We were talking about it. Yeah. Yes. Yep. There were talks, but then I think the whole lawsuit thing and everything like made it difficult, right? Because they didn't know what was going on. Because remember, Chad was in a lawsuit before James, right? I think like it was messy.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
It was rough. Like it went from being such a great team and fun, and, mm-hmm. and then you know you get legal things, then it's not that fun anymore.
No, for sure. Is there a common theme that you see with Chad, James, Kenny? Common traits. They're kind of all different people, you know, but.
Yeah, they're all different for sure. But I don't know. I think majority of them, they need a lot of them. They need somebody really strong, I feel like, in their childhood or younger years, mm-hmm. you know, being a parent or something that's really driven, you know, borderline mean,
yeah, yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or something like that. You know, obviously Chad was different because he kind of did it on himself. But mm-hmm. I feel like they all need to have this little chip on the shoulder in a way to you know, like they're going to prove something, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're from the outside, you're like, dude, you're already a badass. You're already the most skilled rider ever. But yet you're still, you know, they either make imaginary slights, they make up imaginary slights, or they, like you said, they never settle on their bike or whatever it is that drives them to continually to try to get better.
Yeah, because it takes some serious discipline, Like, that's all there is in the end is discipline, because I don't believe it. Nobody can be motivated the whole time, right? So it just slides into, like, discipline. And, like, they need, because all of them could have done way less training and had, you know, it's not like Chad would have been fifth, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But he still, you know, they all put in the work, and, like, even, like, Kenny, for him to even still be racing.
Yeah.
Like, he, that's insane. Like, the amount of work he had to do after his injuries, like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, in a way, forgotten now. You know what I mean? Like, he's just a normal guy.
Yeah, and I think he, I think Kenny, immediately upon coming back from his injuries, was like, well, I'm not going to be the same guy I was supposed to be. I just can't be. So I'm going to treasure every little win or ride or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but also him, though, like, after his injury, like, there was, or injuries, it was the amount of work he did on his body is nuts. Like, he had a physio live with him for 6 months, I believe. You know, they had a table in the kitchen, and he went to California. He flew with him. Like, he was with him more than his girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
Like, he did everything, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you think about, like, the average person that would have no real grasp of that, you know?
No. Yeah. No, it's just the same, like, with Adam. Like, he, you know, he's up there too, you know, like, the amount of stuff they do to keep doing, you know, to excel at their sport.
Having said that, I know Red Dog was testing for Larry a little bit on L&M days, and he would go to the compound in Florida with James. And I mean, Timmy was already kind of done by then, but he was like, he's just like, this fucking guy, like, these jumps, the skill, this, the, every single day, this guy is risking his life and doing different things and laying down heaters. And Timmy's like, I can't even test because I can't even go close to that speed. Like, how can I test? But so anyways, back to just being around James every single day in Florida and all that, just amazing, right?
Oh, it was nuts. Like, I remember in the early days, like, we're riding the Yamaha track, right? And he'd been riding this track for, it seems like forever, you know, a few months.
Yep.
And suddenly one day he, you know, he'd do this other combo that you didn't even think could exist.
Yeah.
You're like, what? But the knowledge things was, so in the end of I don't know, maybe end of 11, you know, the Yamaha deal with Samuel was up, so, you know, James wanted to, you know, run the team, so he had a bunch of production bikes, right? So we're going, I went to the compound, and he's riding bone stock bikes like fully stock, and the stuff he was doing on his motocross track, it made me sweat. Like, I got nervous because he was going so fast and whipping and scrubbing on a stock
on a
bike. Fully stock. It was a yellow one, you know, a red one, a green one, a blue one. It was unbelievable. I'm like, please, we cannot do this. Like, these are not, these are great bikes, but they are not made to do the stuff that you're doing.
No, they're not for guys like you.
No.
Yeah. Hey, another, that leads me to my another question that I just popped up. Like, we do these re-raceables podcasts where we look back at old races and we watch them, and myself, Wygan, and Rarick go through them. Mm-hmm. And man, we watched James, like, on the Yamaha in 10 and 11, and his forks are so stiff on that Yamaha. And then the bike is like a teeter totter. It's, I mean, I don't remember, I was there back in the day, but he's barely hanging on to this thing. And I mean, some of it's due to the bike. They had issues when they turned that motor around, and the frame was soft from what I understand in the rear and stiff in the front. And, but, like, he just looked like he was a passenger on that thing. So I guess the question to you is, like, how much was it, James, and how much was that bike?
Well, when he started off, well, when he first rode the bike, it was funny. They were up at, I think it was up at Castillas, did like a secret photo shoot or whatever, you know, before they revealed it. And he loved it.
Oh, he did?
Best stock bike ever ridden.
Yeah.
And then he went to Monster Cup, not Monster Cup. I think we did US Open on it. That's when they revealed the bike. And obviously won it there. And I want to say he won A1 on it. The first round.
Okay.
And then we went to Phoenix, and that's when he crashed with, was that Partridge?
Yeah.
Over the triple?
Was it?
And
no.
Then he,
was it?
No.
No, Partridge was on a Cowie. He was on a Cowie then.
Who was it? Like, I remember that. It was a privateer.
Yeah.
And then he and Chad went together just before the finish line.
Yeah.
Well, he had a broken navicular Then he got third at Anaheim, and the year was over.
That was it, right?
Right. And then when he came back, he was never good again.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and I think that by obviously it was not a great bike, we know that, right? But like, Josh Hill was almost leading the championship when James was hurt on the same motorcycle.
Yeah, that's right. Hill was doing well.
So I think it was okay for Supercross.
Yeah.
But then he came back and he struggled. He was never really the same, right? And the bike was difficult, yeah, by all means. You know, like, same. Looking at it, he was a passenger.
Yeah, he would clip things in the front end. It would throw him forward, but he had stiff forks, and so that would save him. But then he couldn't turn like he wanted to, and yeah.
Yeah, it was tough. There was a lot of suspension settings.
Has there ever been a rider you've worked with that had stiffer forks?
No. No, they were gnarly. Like, well, now they're getting pretty stiff again, you know, mm-hmm. Adam, because, you know, he has so much leverage.
Yeah.
But I feel like today's forks are so much better. Like, you know, 10 years ago, they had to be super stiff, and that means they wouldn't move.
Yeah.
Right, like now with the modern technology, they figure out how to make it stiff, but have a little bit of feeling, right, and move some.
Yeah, I feel like frames and motorcycles in general have gone softer. The aluminum age,
The bikes are so much better now. It's crazy.
Yeah, than they were when they first started, just piling on aluminum and then making it super stiff, right?
So. Yeah, but with James and his forks, I remember our last year at Yamaha, I was with Chad. We would look at James. This is going to be 08, maybe 07.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where we were. It was somewhere East Coast, and it was this big whoop section. And James would go in to the whoops, and he would like wheelie through the whoops, like a full-on wheelie, right?
Yeah.
And me and Chad are looking at practice like, oh, my God. Like, we are so beat. This is unbelievable. And then the following year when I worked for James, I told him about it. Like, yeah, we saw you in practice. They were like mind-boggled. Like, that was so insane. And he's like, oh, yeah. But that was the only way I could get through them.
That was it. I had a wheelie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's funny, though. Like, we were looking at him, you know, and he was looking at us.
Yeah.
Us, right?
Yeah.
So it's funny. Like, you don't know why the riders are doing what they do.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure, right? Oscar Werdemann here on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. I want to thank the folks at motorsport.com. Go through the banner on pulpmx.com to help us out. And great prices, OEM and aftermarket parts. And, man, great free shipping and everything over $79 and a great return policy. The number one online ordering place out there, motorsport.com. Check them out, please. Thank you. And, of course, Rental, Maxxis, and Fly Racing as well. Oscar, when you – well, first of all, did you work at DeGroote? You worked with Chad, right, in 01 with Chad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started in 98.
So – what was up, before we get into the coming to America part of you, what was up with the shock that was laid down in the back? Did that ever work? Why? What was the idea with that?
They had one before and they had one after me.
Okay.
So they had one in the mid 90s that they did. And then I think afterwards they brought it out again with Leok maybe.
Okay. All right, so you never worked with it. I didn't know if that was...
No, okay. They said it worked really well, but their ground clearance was a problem. But yeah, he designed it all, and it, so, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, in mid-90s, and then it came back in the mid-2000s. But yeah, now we didn't use that.
I think I've told you this story before, and I know I've talked about it on a podcast. Like, Chad in 02, Yamaha Troy... he was riding the Yamaha track, and I was a mechanic for Nick Way at Triple X, and so we'd ride there too. Chad was already talking in 02 about bringing this wonder mechanic over from Sweden that he had. Absolutely loved you. Said he's bringing you over. You're coming to America. You're the greatest mechanic ever. Blah, blah, blah. So we'd already heard the news that Reed was very much in love with you, Oscar, back then. So, yeah.
Yeah, we had a good team. But as a mechanic then, though, like his race mechanic was actually from – Marco was his name. He works for Akropovich now.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah.
No, he meant you. Yeah, he was talking about you. So maybe just suspension.
No, I was just a mechanic, but I took him practicing a lot.
Okay.
Like I spent a lot of time with him and Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously they were kids. So he asked me in 01 to go with him to YOT. But obviously a whole papers and documents wasn't that easy for a private team, right? So that's never happened.
So, but you were willing to do it? You wanted to do it?
Well, yeah. As a factory mechanic in Europe, my dream was to come to America.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because myself and my crew chief at the time, we actually emailed, I remember, Eric Kehoe. It must have been YOT then, mm-hmm, or Honda Troy. Yeah. We emailed him to get a job in America. He never replied. And I remember when he was the Honda manager, I gave him shit. I'm like, I tried to come here. You didn't even reply to my emails.
Damn. So how does Brooks find you and get you to KTM?
So at the time, then I had moved back to Sweden, and I was doing MotoGP right for Orleans, which was perfect for me because, you know, I'm from Sweden, the company's from Sweden. So you're living in your home country, but you're traveling the world, right? Yeah. And you're young, and you get all the benefits, you know, like it's a normal job, quote unquote.
Yep.
So I was pumped on that. But then, so Jonathan Lower, he was Cowie, or last year at Factory Cowie to get together. He was over here with Rhino. So he worked for KTM. So he told Brooksy about me.
Ah, okay.
I didn't really know about it, to be honest. Like, we briefly spoke, but I was like, I wasn't really into it. So I remember Larry.
Who did Hoodie work for? And he was Rhino's buddy when Rhino rode KTM. When? In America? Or in?
Well, so he worked for Factory Cowie for Steve Ramon.
Hoodie did.
And Hoodie did.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I did
yeah,
not know this.
And then he worked for Remy van Rees, which was like a Cowie. He was a Dutch Cowie guy.
Yeah.
Right. So he got a lot of factory parts, right? So he was like,
But then he went to America and became buddies with Rhino. That's how it worked?
Yeah, he was buddy. We were all hanging out with Rhino in Europe, you know, because he was American. And, you know, he had a big motorhome. He stayed in the pit. So we all got to know him. And then Hoodie, I don't even know. Hoodie was over in America for something. And in the end, up being Rhino's mechanic there for a few years.
Got it. Okay.
So he
told Brooks.
He told Brooks, and Brooks called me, and we were in Brazil for a MotoGP race. And I still remember it because he calls me and he's like, hey, this is Larry Brooks. You know, being a kid from Sweden, you know, Larry Brooks, you read about him in Motocross Action. Like,
yeah.
So that's a big name, right? So I was like, are you sure? Kind of okay. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know you were going to call me. And he's like, hey, I hear you want to come here to America and be a mechanic. And I remember, and I told him, I was like, no, not really. And he went dead silent. So that was the beginning of our conversation. And then I thought about it some more, right? Because until I moved back to Sweden, that's all I wanted to do, you know, was to come to America and do it. And
well, why'd you tell him not really then?
Well, at the time, I was happy what I was doing, right?
Yeah.
So at that moment, I was like, no, I'm here in Brazil for a road race, seeing the beach. You know what I mean? Like, life's good here.
It's a girl in a thong in front of me on the beach in Brazil.
Could have been, right? Yeah. And then I was actually talking to my boss, Mats, at Orleans at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling him about this. Like, yeah, this guy, you know, they asked me to come there. And he told me, like, hey, you should go. You're still young.
Yeah.
You know, you should go now. And I was like really confused. I'm like, whoa, what are you telling me this for? I more or less came here to tell you that I was turning down this other job so you can pay me more money. And you're telling me to leave?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you're young. You should go and try it out. If there's opportunity here, you can always come back.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, you know, that's awesome. I'm like, I go check out America, you know, because it was my dream forever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't really want to go back to be a mechanic again. So in the end of 2003, I came here and I was planning to be here for 2 years.
And you worked for Hanny?
No, Langston.
Langston in
04.
04. Okay, so he won the title in 03, right?
Yeah, so yeah. 250, 04. Two-stroke, no linkage.
Oh, yeah, so that he's just eating shit every weekend, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He spent a lot of Saturdays at the local ERs.
You know what, though? Like, going backwards a little bit, it seems odd to me that Larry would call a kid in Sweden for a job. That seems un-Larry Brooks-like. He was my manager in 99 at Chaparral, so I do know Larry well. And he must have really, you know, wanted a foreign – well, you know, there is a part, too, where if you hire a good dude from another country, all he's going to do is work. He's got no life. So
exactly.
Maybe that's why Larry was doing that, yeah.
I think Rhino and Hoodie and Larry was really tight in 03, right?
Because true, yeah.
That's when they had those internal battles at
KTM. He was taking front wheels off of bikes and stuff.
Yeah, right. So I think he hated all American mechanics maybe at that time.
Maybe, yeah.
and I think, Hoodie obviously sold me to it, you know?
Yeah.
And I know he asked Chad. I remember both Larry and I think GL2, they spoke to Chad and asked about me.
Oh, and then Chad would have vouched for you 100%. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, did you like living in America that first year?
I loved it.
Yeah, you did? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I didn't like was the Inland Empire, because the racing and everything was awesome, right? Like, it was just as in the pictures you saw on the Racer X, you know, the Nationals and the Supercross, and you didn't have to wash bikes as much as in Europe.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And the traveling wasn't a problem because I'd never been to these places, and I had no home anyway.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
So the only thing I didn't like at the time, you know, living in Temecula,
yeah,
that was not the California I was picturing.
No, no, it's not quite it, right?
You know, I was like, where I see palm trees, but where's the ocean?
It's funny that the you about a month ago we were talking about something, and you quizzed a bunch of us. We were standing around bullshitting, and you said, you know, who's the only rider I ever won Daytona with? And you know, we're all just sitting there and we're like thinking, was Shane there? I don't know if Shane was sitting there or not, but we were thinking about Stu and Chad and Kenny or anybody that you've done. And no, the answer is Josh Hansen.
Yeah. Yeah. That was obviously unexpected to win Daytona. He got a little bit of help, you know, people crashed, but
yeah.
he had a killer year. You know, he was a lot of work. That was the first time I think I've been like so heavily invested with a rider.
Yeah.
But so going into the 05 season, there was the new 254 strokes, right? KTM had. We only had two bikes, I believe, and we had four riders, maybe five riders. So the East Coast guys were riding 252 strokes, you know, essentially the same bike as Langston rode, tried to race, right? And Hanny on a supercross track was unbelievable on that bike. Hmm. Like me and Larry were both like, this is the diamond. Like, this is the new McGrath. So then we work with him. We had to pick him up. We had to hold him accountable. And, like, he did great the first year. You know, he tied in points with Langston.
Yep.
But, man, he was a lot of work.
Yeah, he got too much money too soon, you know?
Yeah, for sure. He was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
My first time I went riding with him, when we first started to work, we went to Lake Elsinore. We drove out there together in my pickup truck. And he rode a little bit, and then he goes talk to his friends, and then he rode a little bit, and then he disappeared. I loaded up the bike, and I drove back to the shop. I left him there because he didn't ride.
Really? Because he was just, not there? Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember he came back to Larry complaining. He's like, I need a new mechanic. This guy's an asshole. And a couple of months later, he was like to me and Larry, like, I love you guys. You guys do everything for me. I'm like, yep, there's a reason.
Yeah, we
there's
have a to. Reason, right?
Reason we left you.
I remember I was at KTM in 00 and 01. And at one point, they flew a WP guy in from Holland. He was a British guy, but he worked at WP. And he was telling me, he was showing me the dyno for a linkage shock and a WP no link shock. And they were the same curve. And he's like, you know, this is through whoop section. This should work. This is exactly the same. This should be the same. Look at this. And we're just like, it's not, man. It's not. We can watch the guys go through the whoops, and by the end, they're barely hanging on. So, like, I know your dyno says they're the same, but it's not.
It's not the same. It's very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah, he just couldn't figure it out, because on dyno, it looked the same curve. So
the linkage does a lot of work, lot of work.
Yeah. So that was a pretty funny time because those bikes, they worked well outdoors though, you know, but supercross.
Yeah.
Not so
and a smaller bike, like the 250F was not bad.
Yeah.
You know, the new bike, but like they always, but I feel too, like in the earlier days, the KTM always, they had such a advantage on their engine.
Yeah.
They were always so fast that they kind of made up for it.
Well, I think one of the things they did was they moved the shock to the side, so the air boot was a straight shot. It was a huge carburetor for a 125 back then. I think it was a 38.
Yeah, I think that's why they didn't have no linkage too, right? Because then you can put the shock to the side.
Yeah, and then they get a full air, and then the thing is the horsepower king, right?
Yeah, but the bigger bikes in Supercross, that was not friendly.
No, not at all. So you're at KTM. You're going to be there for 2 years, and then you're going to go back home and work for Ohlins and MotoGP. That was the plan?
That was kind of the plan, yeah. And then, Larry was the team manager. Obviously, the first year with Langston, he was hurt a lot. He had we almost thought his career was over too, right? When his hand, nerve damaged, some kind of nerve damage, I believe. But it was still new. And then, Hanny, tied in Supercross. So that was fun. Mm-hmm. Then the following year with Hanny was not so fun. but then that's 2005. But then during Supercross in 2005 is when, no, 2006. It's got to be 2006. It's when Larry and Kraniak started L&M. It's funny. Larry sweated me to sign a contract with KTM forever, right?
Okay.
I didn't want to sign a contract because I'm like, I'm here anyway. I just didn't want to sign the contract.
Yeah, you're like, I want to be able to have some flexibility or whatever.
Yeah, so he was sweating me, and eventually he's like, you have to sign it. Okay, no problem. And then a few months later, he comes to me and he's like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm starting this team. You have to figure out a way to get out of your contract so you can come with me.
You're like, yeah, thanks. So
yeah, exactly. Thanks.
Who'd you work for in 06 then when he was doing that?
Hansen.
So oh, still Hansen. Okay.
I left. Larry left after Supercross.
Yep.
And I think I left after maybe like two nationals.
Okay. Oh, so you were there before it was a team then. You were building it from the.
Oh yeah, it was. Yeah. Me and him, we didn't have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
When we started. Yeah. So we started and we were driving around. So we were, find a building and everything. Yeah. I was there from.
I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We started and then eventually we got a building. That was cool, but we couldn't get no internet or anything. So we were sitting in this empty office building, and then we had to buy furniture. We bought it all on our credit cards and then we got reimbursed. And then we had to, design the building, go through all the code enforcement. Mm-hmm. Bought the diner room and then Dudley Craymond came on, but for the whole year basically I think it was just maybe like the three of us did essentially the whole foundation of it.
Did Larry take Dudley from KTM too?
Yeah, so he was
KTM must have been really happy about this.
Yeah. I think they were pumped because we also had Dudley, myself,
DeLorean. Oh, DeLorean came over. Yeah, at some point.
Big Al, Lauren Lowry, truck driver, he came over. Deborah, secretary, came over, and then later on, Jared Bam came too.
Was that just Larry and Nickel butting heads? Was Kurt still there, or Kurt gone by then?
No, Kurt and Larry were cool.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Why? Yeah, because Kurt just kind of took over afterwards, I think.
Oh, was that it? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I could be wrong. No, they were always super good. I think it's like the whole Alessis was there.
Yep.
And it was a lights team, and dealing with Europe was difficult, right? Like it's not the KTM that it was now.
But I think Larry's the one who kind of helped that Alessi thing along,
He did. No, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so he wanted that whole circus, so he got it. So
yeah, he did get results too, though. Like he for them.
No,
but I think he wanted to work with a 450 Supercross champion, right? What I mean? That's everybody's dream. And,
sure.
And I don't really know how it came about. Like if Mike Kraniak contacted him or whatever, and then slowly but surely
was Kraniak even at the race as much? Like I don't remember.
No.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
No. It was unbelievable, right? Because obviously his son, Sean, at the time raced, like a privateer level.
Yep.
I think during the 5 years or whatever, I might have touched his bike maybe twice.
Yeah.
If I owned a team, like my whole family would have bikes from there, right? But he was so kept it, like this was a business.
Yep.
Like he didn't use anything. And like when he showed up to the races, he was just like Mike, he was just like in the corner, just like checking it out, did not act like how big of a deal he actually is. You know what I mean? It was very impressive to see.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. I remember him just you know, being this team owner of Chad Reed and James Stewart, and then, yeah, never really taking advantage of it or not walking around like that or anything, you know. It was really, really kind of weird, but it was good in a way. So
yeah, he just loved it. He was just a fan, yeah, like all of us, right? Yeah. But he's like, I just want to have a fan. And then that's why he put in, from what I know, you know, the first few years, you know, he put in his money, but then the goal was to start to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So the team would, you know, survive by itself. And that's what we were just starting to do when this things went south.
Went sideways. What's your biggest regret of your career? What did you ever pass up a job opportunity, or did you ever, you know, do something you shouldn't have done, or like, you got any?
Well, I thought about that many times, right? Like, I was, for the longest time, for the biggest one for me was what I didn't go with, Chad for Suzuki.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they haunted me a lot. Like, yeah. I don't think I even did the decision. I don't think I really could in the end, because there was like legal reasons, or I kind of got pushed, you know, for
like you had a work visa for just Kranjak or something, right?
I probably used that as a crutch, because it probably could have got, you know, when you don't really want to do the decision, mm-hmm, but you can't.
Yeah.
I fought that for a long time. And then, like, even the other day, I was like, man, what would I have been if I still worked in MotoGP? You know, if I would have stayed there, I would have been 25 years in that pits, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, like, if I didn't do those decisions, I wouldn't be where I'm at today.
No. Yep.
You know, if I would stay with Chad for 10 years, maybe I would have been burned out and stopped. Or, mm-hmm, you know, if I stayed in Sweden, I might have would worked for something else, right? So I think they were all those decisions were, you know.
Yeah.
Meant to be, I guess, for a way, you know, because even leaving like Kenny, you know, that was hard. Like, every time you leave a rider that wants to work with you,
yeah,
like, it's tough, you know. And
left Kenny because the team folded, right? Or
no, did I, no, when I started, no, I when I went to Kenny when the 2-2 was over, that's why I started for Kenny.
Oh, okay. And then, so you left for Cowie.
No, so I was with Kenny for Suzuki,
yep,
and Honda. And
oh,
then
shit.
Yeah. That's, and then right. I quit Honda because I was done.
That's right.
I was done.
Yes, I remember that now. I'm sorry. My notes are backwards then. Yes. It's right. You went to Honda.
Yep. Yeah. So I started, yeah, when 2-2 went south. Mm-hmm. Shut the door. Like, I could have stayed, maybe, you know, done something with Chad or Yamaha.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I was suspension guy at the time. Then Kenny started to talk to me, or Courtney, right? Because Courtney she worked for our team as a PR person.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, oh, you should come over to work with Kenny, be a suspension guy.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, they already had a suspension guy. And then Kenny's old mechanic, left.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, we're looking for mechanics. I think it was basically me, Lars, and Goose were on that was the pick for Kenny.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got that job. So that's the third time I came back being a mechanic.
Yeah. Well, listen, why not, right? When you have success.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can always do it.
I quit when I went to road racing. In 2002, I quit mechanic because I don't want to be wash bikes anymore.
Yeah,
and then I came back. And then I came back.
They came back again. Did you ride or race in Sweden? Did you like?
I tried to.
Okay.
I wasn't very good.
Okay.
You know, basically just, you know, on small bikes on 80s, you know, and then I think we went through it last time. It was a enduro guy in our town.
Oh, enduro guy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was 5 years older than me, and I started to hang out in his garage, right? Like, basically spent every day there. I definitely was no mechanic, but yeah, he was a factory Husaberg racer, and he ended up winning like 5 world titles.
Oh, wow.
When he was old 7.
Okay.
So that's when I realized, like, I can actually travel outside Sweden, and I can make a couple of bucks if I work on bikes and not ride them.
I do that instead, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, but like, are you anywhere near where Lars' family's from and all that? Like, Lars' brother's still over there?
Okay. They're like 2.5 hours.
Oh, okay.
Three, yeah, well, so you would say it's pretty
country.
Close.
Yeah, it's a big country, so that's not that far, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny how you guys are like two of the most prominent mechanics in our industry for a little while, and you guys are both Sweden. And I mean, Lars is basically American, but like, yeah.
Yeah, he claimed to be Swedish, but I'm telling you, he's not.
No, I know.
But it is funny though. I was pumped when we worked together because yeah. he would give me so much shit when I'd be talking the English with him. He's like, "Why are you talking English to me? Like, you need to speak Swedish." Because my Swedish was actually getting bad for never speaking it.
How does he know Swedish so well growing up in America? Like, I obviously know his dad and all that, but like, did he take? He never lived in Sweden, did he?
No, but his whole family was Swedish, right? So his family
so
moved to America.
He just picked it up?
Mom and dad and brothers and sister, yep. they spoke Swedish at home.
Oh, okay.
And then every summer as a kid, he spent in Sweden with his uncles.
Ah, okay. So he just picked it up that way. Okay.
So I say the last 25 years, he probably spent way more time in Sweden than me.
Yeah, really, right? Go figure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Well, man, hey, this has been fun. Thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
No worries.
Yeah, I wanted to catch up with you again. I did a long-form podcast, you know, to kind of go through your career a little bit, but I had a lot of questions for you. Kind of a lot of times when I'm in the pits or when I'm flying, I'm like, you know, I already talked to Oscar once on the show and I did a podcast with him, but it's time to catch up. So that's kind of where I was
Anytime. I you know, we spend some time driving, so I listen to a lot of your podcasts too. So it's always fun and interesting.
Yeah, I think people dig it, man. What a career you've had. What a successful career and all the things you've done. Really, really cool. I mean, I've said this before, like I won one national as a mechanic and I don't ever stop talking about it. Think of all the things you won. Good God.
They're hard to come by.
Exactly. Well, congrats on the success, yeah, man. Well, we will see at the races. You'll finish up with AC, and then maybe outdoors or not. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But exciting times. Thanks, Oscar. Appreciate it, man.
All right, no worries. Have a good one.
See ya. Yeah.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners.